The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
I help people every day to improve their health. Sometimes they've had lifelong issues or not fully recovered after a stressful event. The doctors have often run out of ideas. My name is Kevin Davis. Our bioresonance system starts with an automated full body scan. It's simply the quickest way to shine a light on what's going on inside, with treatments during the same session. For the latest health tech at the best price, visit biohealthtech.co.uk today and make us your first choice for a healthier you.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. My name is Kirsten Hartwig, and this is the Herbal Medicine Show, brought to you by Heartwood Herbal Education. In today's show, we're back at the Heartwood base at Emerson College, and I visit my fellow Viking, Trude Lauksund, in the vegetable garden. My guests in the herb garden are professional storyteller Ashley Ramsden, who recites poems in aid of the Greenhouse Fund, and Dr. Philip Kilner tells us about relational arts and organic design. In between the stories, we hear music by Nick Rowley and Peter Firebrace. Welcome to your weekly dose of plant power. Autumn is upon us. Leaves swirling in the wind. It's Halloween, All Hallow, All Saints, Remembrance. Time to light the fire. Time to draw inwards and remember the powerful bond that exists between life and death. Time to remember roots. In nature, seeds have been formed and spread, ready to sprout in the spring. The energy is drawing down to be protected by the earth while winter and darkness rule the land. Like the seed, the root contains the energy needed for a new plant to grow when the light returns. Animals and people don't spend much time putting down physical roots, but we are rooted in family and tradition, in thoughts and feelings about the past, love and loss, guilt and gratitude. It's good to honor these and set them all free. In herbal traditions, rosemary is for remembrance. And interestingly, it is used in modern herbalism to help memory, and it's an effective remedy for tension headache. It also stimulates circulation and the nervous system, and is a traditional tonic for the heart. This is a good time of year to drink rosemary tea. The plant is an evergreen, so you can grow it in your garden and have fresh supplies all year. Take one or two fresh sprigs, or a teaspoon of dried rosemary to a cup of boiling water. Make an infusion like any tea, cover with a lid to preserve the volatile oils, leave to infuse for 5 to 10 minutes, and enjoy up to 3 cups a day. But back to roots. All plants need roots to connect with the earth's nutrients and to absorb water. But biennial and perennial plants that die down in winter also need them for energy storage. Those are the roots we use for food and medicine. They're rich in carbohydrates, protein and micronutrients. Famous roots are beetroot, carrot, parsnip and horseradish. Potatoes are technically tubers. The difference between a root and a tuber is that a tuber is really a seed containing the potential from which a whole new plant can grow, while roots are anchors from which the same plant can grow again. Famous tubers include potato, sweet potato, yam, and Jerusalem artichoke. There's a very interesting yam called Chinese yam, Chinese potato or cinnamon vine, Dioscorea batatas in Latin. And it's also called light root because it is thought to connect us with light, which is interesting, since it's available at the time of year when the light is less. I know they grow it at Emerson, so I went up to see my friend Trude in the Emerson vegetable garden. I'm the guest in the garden today, because the garden is the vegetable garden at Emerson, where Trude is the gardener. And Trude has a Scandinavian name like Kirsten, because she's also a Scandinavian. But a bit further north, you come from Norway.
From Vesterålen.
Vesterålen.
300 miles above the Arctic Circle.
Wow, that is impressive. So how did you land in Emerson?
I wanted to have an education as a gardener, and then I Googled something strange like non-conventional gardening education for grown-up people. I don't know. there were not so many options in Scandinavia just at this time. There was one in Sweden, Skillebyholm, and then Emerson College came up. So I thought, I better go there. And I did.
And you did. And you took the biodynamic farming training here then?
Yeah, gardening.
Gardening, yeah.
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 I'm a bit afraid of animals, so I better stick to plants.
Yeah, I'm a plant person myself.
Yeah. So I was 1 year here at Emerson, and then I was an apprentice at Tablehurst Farm.
Which is next year, isn't
yeah.
it? Then they are a big vegetable growing biodynamic farm.
Yes.
Because this is all about biodynamic farming. And I know you and Chris here have been trying to initiate me into biodynamic
yeah.
farming, because it's quite an amazing way of looking at life. And I've never really learned about it before, but I'm fascinated by it now. And I can see that it is actually, it's the kind of spiritual side of herbal medicine that we have
yeah.
forgotten. And
yeah,
it's and there's no doubt that the plants you have here in the garden are, that just look so healthy and happy.
Yeah. No, that's true. Biodynamics is one of very many good organic ways to grow vegetables. So instead of being to exclude other ideas or techniques, I look into everything. But biodynamics is the sky over whatever we do.
That's lovely, because it takes in the sort of nature forces as well as the plants and the soil, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really amazing with this. We try to follow the plant calendar, which would take into account the positions of the planets and what constellation the moon is in. So you find favorable times to do your chores. So if you are going to harvest carrots for storage, I would choose a day when the moon is in front of a Earth constellation, because then they will, it is really proven, they will keep better. So it will favor that part of the plant.
But it's amazing, but it's also logical, I think, because there's no, those stars and planets out there are not just there for to look pretty. They obviously have an effect, and you can see just the moon on the, it drives the tides.
Mm,
so
yeah.
I think it's logic.
Yeah.
Even if we don't quite understand it, things can still be logical, even if we don't understand it.
Yeah, I mean, the tides is really a good example. If you think of the forces it takes to make the sea go up and down, it's really, wow.
Yeah.
So we should take all this into account, I think.
Yeah.
It really affects what we do, and then we can work more in the flow and with nature and what is happening.
In tune with the rest of the universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
As much as possible.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So you grow the vegetables for the kitchen here?
Yeah, as much as I can manage. But we do also buy a little bit from outside. Because some weekends maybe we have 50 guests and other weekends we have 200. So it's a bit unpredictable. But both the chefs and the guests really appreciate to have food that is grown here on site. And if you think of food, it doesn't really like to travel. When you pick a vegetable, it should just go straight to the kitchen and not travel many, many miles. It loses nutrients, it loses taste and color and crispness. So there is really a big difference to eat what has been grown here.
Mm, that's a really good point. Yeah. Because also if vegetables have to travel a long way, like bananas, you have to pick them before they're actually ripe.
Yeah.
So the sugars haven't actually developed in the same ways as they do, or the carbohydrates, which is the energy from the sun that hasn't been allowed to develop before it was harvested.
No, you should pick things when they are ready to be picked.
Yeah. But in modern society, that is a bit of a poser. But it's lovely to see that there are places on Earth that actually live by those principles as much as possible.
Yeah.
And you want to, you and I have a plan together, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Vikings are coming again. Because you'd like to extend the growing season, wouldn't you?
Yes. We really want to buy a greenhouse to be able to to grow more greens over winter and more summer crops like tomatoes and peppers and have a proper rotation. Right now we have a medium, quite old greenhouse. It's not going to live forever. It's 72 square meters. So I grow as much as I can in there now over winter, but it's not really enough to feed the kitchen. So we are looking at a secondhand 128 square meter greenhouse.
Wow, that's as big as a house. I think it's actually bigger than the house I live in at the moment.
But even in a greenhouse, things grow slower over winter. So,
because they still need the light.
Yeah. So we really need some space to grow. 100 years ago, I think they only ate leeks and parsnips and those things that they could grow here in England. But
potatoes,
food, I suppose. But food fashions now and expectations of people are more towards greens.
Yeah.
And we can't just serve people parsnips and leeks and Brussels sprouts. That is all wonderful.
Yeah, I suppose in northern countries, the brassicas are the winter greens, aren't they?
Yeah.
The curly kale, and they can stand out all winter, and the Brussels sprouts and so on. But it's nice to mix them with some lighter greens as well.
Yeah, that's true.
And the herb gardens, particular interest in the greenhouse is to have a space to propagate plants that herbalists have used and overused in the wild, so they're actually becoming extinct.
Yeah.
So we would like to start a propagation of things that need bringing back. And we're just starting a partnership with a Greek botanic garden who have, they've taken all the wild plants they could find in all of Greece and brought them together in a propagation project to domesticate them, to make sure that they don't go extinct. So I think that's really wonderful. And I'm thinking, ooh, that's nice. We could do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a bit bigger than I can think of just at the moment. But it's a lovely idea, I think, because lots of wild plants, because of modern farming, because most of them are seen as weeds, so they're just being sprayed. So there's these deserts of monoculture, that to actually look at that squarely and take the weeds and start propagating them and putting them back again, I think is a really good idea.
Yeah, the weeds are really the native plants of a plant. They're just growing in the wrong space.
Yes, exactly. Or as far as they're concerned, they have been invaded, haven't they? And so it's like, colonization has happened in agriculture as well as people.
Yeah.
So, like, the Vikings are like the potatoes. Oh. But this time of year, until we get the greenhouse, truly, is about root, isn't it? Because all the energy of the earth is going down into the soil to be stored there while the winter rages, and so it can come back up again in the spring. And you've just been harvesting a really interesting root that I didn't know before, which is called light root. And I'd really like you to tell us something about that.
Not many people in England grow this. it is a native plant of China. And the reason that people grow it here, I think, has to do with Rudolf Steiner, who was the initiator of biodynamic agriculture. After he gave his 8 lectures to farmers who had approached him because they were really worried about food quality after the introduction of
chemical
fertilizers. They really could see and they felt within themselves that the quality is going down. What will become of us?
That was 100 years
ago. That's 100 years ago. So imagine they would be around now. But anyway, after he gave those lectures, he was about to leave and there was a car or a horse to pick him up. And 3 young people ran after him and they asked him, if we do all this that you taught us now, will that be enough? Will we be able to grow proper food? And then the story is that he said, no, not really. You need to replace the potato as a staple in your diet. You need to get hold of the patatas Dioscorea.
Patatas Dioscorea, I think you said.
Dioscorea, which is this Chinese yam. He believed that potatoes, too much of it, would make us more into a materialistic thought pattern.
And even though I find it really hard to accept that, because I love potatoes.
I do too.
But, you know, there may be something about it, because certainly since the potatoes arrived in Europe, we have become much more materialistic, haven't
That's
we?
True.
And yeah, and just think of Van Gogh's The Potato Eaters.
Yeah.
And we have sort of based society around potatoes and then at the same time become much more materialistic.
Yeah.
So I find that very challenging, I must admit. And I wonder how, you know, maybe in, because it comes from South America, doesn't it, the potato?
Yeah.
So I wonder how the natives there, how they went about having potatoes.
Yeah,
maybe
really
they didn't
know.
Have quite as many as we do.
But what is interesting about the light root is when we have Chinese guests here, because they know it very well, and not via Rudolf Steiner.
Mm-hmm.
They know it as in their folk tradition as a medicinal plant,
mm-hmm.
and they say the Chinese name translated into English means mountain medicine.
Mountain medicine?
Yeah.
Ah.
And one lady said that parents would buy this and give to their children over winter because it makes them more robust.
Mm.
And they would give a little bit and often.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had a root over last winter and I just grated it into my porridge.
Uh-huh. So you ate it raw?
Well, just steamed for 2-3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really tell you if it had many effects, but it was interesting. Oh,
you look pretty robust. Were you ill over the winter?
Oh, I didn't really...
No.
Get ill.
And so how would you eat it like, how would you cook it? I mean, if you don't have it on your porridge, do they use it in China as a staple as well, like we used potatoes?
I think even in China it's quite expensive.
Okay.
On the continent, it's much more widely used than here. In Switzerland,
okay.
It's quite expensive. It's like £30 a kilo.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they will just cook it a little bit together with other vegetables, steam it or bake it or...
So is there a tradition then of people using it and knowing the difference or what?
Well, people can state many things, but then there is what would a scientific research show? I don't know.
Yeah, but I think scientific research doesn't always show the... Real
no,
results.
That's true. Well, people claim they feel very good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
So what are you going to use these for? You've got you've got hundreds of pounds worth here.
Yeah. Well, last year we gave them to the kitchen and we had, it didn't really come out well, maybe because they didn't really know how to cook it. It is quite a slimy thing.
All right.
It's not really grown for taste.
Okay.
It's more... Right. Some other effects.
That makes it hard for it to compete with potatoes.
Yes, it does.
You probably can't make chips and...
Well, you could, but this is something we need to explore. And also in Germany, it's they will dry it and grind it, make it into herb salt. What do you think? A future thing?
Oh, not adventure.
Or with cereals. And so we have a drying cabinet, so we'll just start experimenting more with this.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you very much, Tude, for letting us into the garden and telling us about what you're doing.
You're always welcome.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. My name is Kirsten Hartwig, and this is the Herbal Medicine Show. Here at Emerson, we've got a professional fundraiser who's come from Brussels, I think. She's got funding to raise money for something, and she asked whether Emerson needed money for something. And of course, college like this always needs money for something. And she decided to settle on a greenhouse because we have a very beautiful garden that I keep talking about every week. And a greenhouse would be such a lovely space, both for plant propagation, but also for to use a space undercover when the weather isn't good. And here at Emerson, we also have something very exciting, which is an international school of storytelling. And I have trapped Ashley Ramsden, who is a famous storyteller and who works, is based here at Emerson. And I'm so lucky that he's doing a course this weekend. So Ashley and I have decided that every week, we're going to, for the next few weeks, we're going to tell the story of the greenhouse. So Ashley, it's over to you. Do you know how far they've got so far?
They're just beginning. Just beginning, but I'm very, very enthusiastic about the whole project because growing things and the images out of stories and poetry that have to do with seeds, that have to do with the cycle of the seasons, and that kind of connectedness that we're searching for again. Anything, any house, any home for that is something that I've feel the need of myself, and I sense other people do as well.
Beautiful. So are there any stories of greenhouses, I wonder?
I will find some, for sure. Walking up this morning in this beautiful weather on this lovely autumn day, I was thinking of projects, any kinds of projects that people are trying to start, and a poem of Rumi's came to me, the great 13th century poet who was such a generous soul. And he says in one of his little aphorisms, one of his poems, there is a light seed grain inside each of us. We feed it or it dies. And in another place, he talks of someone setting out on a venture, on a project, I suppose, and he speaks to them like this. He says, these spiritual window shoppers who idly ask, how much is this? Oh, I'm just looking. They handle 100 things and put them down, shadows with no capital. What is spent is love and two eyes wet with weeping. But these walk into a shop and their whole lives pass before them in that moment, in that shop. Where did you go? Nowhere. What did you have to eat? Nothing much. Even if you don't know what you want, buy something and become part of the human exchange. Start a huge, foolish project, like Noah. It makes absolutely no difference what people think of you. It makes absolutely no difference what people think of you. So this is such a foolish project, the best project. One just has to go for these things and create them and know that, you know, there's a hunger out there.
Yeah, isn't that beautiful?
For just that.
Yeah.
And particularly when you're in the presence of things that start in seed and you can watch them grow and tend to them. There's such a gift that comes back to me when I do that, when I work in my allotment, when I'm out just observing plants.
Yeah, isn't that true?
Such a gift.
Yeah. So we'll see if we can grow the greenhouse.
We'll see if we can grow the greenhouse. And what I'd like to do is to bring some poems, bring some stories from week to week that I hope will be food Shall I leave you with one more just before we go?
Please, yes.
Again, it's Rumi, where my soul goes home, who I said, in a certain sense, was such a generous soul that at his passing, the great leaders of all the great religions were present, feeling that they had lost a friend, a great guide. He says, inside each of us, there's continual autumn. Our leaves fall and are blown out over the waters. A crow sits in the blackened limbs and talks about what's gone. Then suddenly your generosity returns. Spring, moisture, intelligence, the scent of rose and hyacinth. Joseph is back. And if you can't feel the freshness of Joseph inside you, be Jacob. There's a necessary dying. And then Jesus is breathing again. Be ground, be crumbled, so that wild flowers can come up wherever you are. You've been stony for so many years. Try something different. Surrender. Thank you.
So I'm sitting in the garden again today, and I've got a beautiful sunshiny view, and I've also got a guest that is my neighbor in the garden as well. His name is Philip Kilner, and welcome, Philip.
Thank you.
You're here to talk about the course you're doing in relational arts and organic design. So that's a very interesting title. I wonder what that covers.
The title, I'm not sure if it easily conveys what it's about. I think almost a better title would be Discovery Through Art and Science. Really not separating science and art. They're both complementary and supportive approaches to our experience of the world and our experience of being human.
And are you, because I know that you are a scientist and an artist as well, so you're perfectly placed to do that, because you worked as a doctor in a hospital.
Yes, I guess more years in science than trying to practice arts, and I wouldn't claim to be an artist, but I've always since childhood been interested particularly in the visual arts and sculpture. And I studied sculpture here at Emerson College after I'd studied medicine. Mm. And really out of what I got from that went back into mainstream medical research and then diagnostic imaging of the heart. So the heart, the flow through the heart and the form and structure of the heart became an enormous interest for me. But arriving at that, interestingly, through work in sculpture and flow here at Emerson College in 1980.
How interesting. And so did you design this course?
Yes, together with a group of us. It came about through three of us, Nick Weidman and Daniel Doherty and myself, just in conversation, saying that actually we have enough people within the college who are able to support such a course. We don't need to invite contributors out from outside, although we can also do that. And so it came about with conversations and then bringing in more people who are based here in the college. And the plan is a three-month program with the sort of key words of inquiry for the first month, human or humane creativity for the second month, and purpose for the third month, really what you're going to do with that experience and how you're going to take it out. And we're at the end of the first month now.
How wonderful. So I know you've done plants because you did that with me.
Yes.
But you've done plants. We just looked at what is here in the garden, but you did plant studies in many different ways.
That's right. So in this inquiry month, which we've just completed, we subdivided it into first the four classical elements, earth, water, air and warmth or fire, which are also kind of representative of the states of material, solid, liquid, vaporous, and then warmth moves through all those materials. That was in the first week, and then plants in the second week, then animals in the third week, and the human as similar and different from animals in the fourth week. And of course, they're all intermingled, so we keep on sort of bringing others into one another.
How wonderful. And so then that was the inquiry month. Then there's was that inquiry?
Inquiry, yes.
Now, what's the next one?
Then creativity is the one catchword, but actually I ought to add human or humane creativity, because it's a lot to do with now being human with yourself, your reflective inner self, and human in society, socially, and human in relation to the environment, all these things. So there's a lot to explore here through the second month, but it's all,
So how do you do that?
Yeah, quite.
That's what I'd like to know.
And as it turns out, we've got a number of different weeks which can actually still be taken individually.
You don't have to take the whole 3 months.
It's still possible to enrol for individual weeks in the coming month. Uh-huh. In this next week, the overall title of the main contributors is In Search of the Deep Self. Mm. It's really a path of search and trying to
so
find.
How do you search for your deep self?
And I'm not the leader of that part of it. I would leave it to Deborah Rivets, who's the main leader, together with her husband, Tom. They're doing the sort of main session each day, one main session each day. It doesn't mean your selfish self. It means something else. It means, in a way, what you find yourself here on earth now really called in your higher self, I think, to be doing.
Higher self or inner self?
Inner self, yes. Deeper self. Okay. Any of those.
Beautiful.
They're not literal.
No, that's really beautiful.
To it. And not all of us are able to discover that, even in our lifetime. But that's what this week is about, if I can.
Wow. So what's next week?
The following week. It's a little bit more mixed, but part of it is human in relation to the environment and the environmental concerns that we may all feel, but feel helpless to do anything about, exploring that in different ways.
How wonderful. So then the last month, you put it all together? Can you still do individual weeks of the last month, or is that?
No, we're not offering that. It's not. If an individual really felt that they wanted to come here and be supported in such a month, we wouldn't be closed to the idea at all, and they can contact me. But it's really under the heading of purpose. It's for each individual, or maybe in pairs or threes, to identify what they want to work on themselves to take further into their further work and life.
And in this beautiful environment. So do you use it? So it's science and arts. What sort of artistic expressions do you use?
So far, what
scientific experiments do you do on yourself?
Well, the science is a little bit easier for me because I come more strongly from that side. But it's really observational perception-based science, direct perceptive observing experience as the basis.
So double-blind clinical trials?
No, not that. Those are not direct experience. That's just collecting statistics rather remotely.
Isn't that true?
On something.
Yeah.
No, it's actually your perceptions of seeing, hearing, if possible, without naming things, so without bringing concepts, but actually seeing all that's there and the context of all that's there in it. Say a trees are in front of me now and plants, but they're not in isolation. They've got the roots in the soil, and the soil's damp from the rain, and they've got their leaves in the air, and the air's moving around the atmosphere.
Getting down into that sort of deep being here now presence, I suppose, which is essential, quite difficult in the modern society when we're also
another overall way of saying our aims is finding a right relationship with yourself inwardly, a right relationship with our natural environment, and a right relationship socially.
Yeah.
That sounds, so experiencing all those, and they're all intermingled.
Yeah, how wonderful. Yeah. So if I wanted to do your course, come and join next week, can I just ring the Emerson reception?
I'd say first look at the website. That's what I personally would do.
The Emerson website?
The Emerson website is emerson.org.uk. And one of the courses that I think is still up there is Relational Arts and Organic Design is the name of it, so Relational Arts. And you can find the course page. In that, in the middle of it, there's a green link to a question and answer about the synergy of art and science, which I think is quite a good way of sort of getting into our approach.
Yeah.
And then my email address is in there, Philip Kilner. It's my email address is phikilner@gmail.com, phikilner.
Yeah.
@gmail.com. But that's in there.
Phi Kilner, that's nice.
Yes.
That goes into the
stands for the golden ratio.
And that you must be working a lot for that.
We have been. This isn't about the art that we've been doing, but it's been with Via and Daniel Doherty in their studio for the Sacred Art of Geometry, which is just a beautiful space and a beautiful way of working. Really with respect for the preparation of materials and the way that you use them.
Wonderful. And can people stay here if they come from
I think there may still be accommodation. It's limited, but there's also bread and bed and breakfast locally.
Yeah, and I think the college has a list of those if they don't have space themselves, don't they?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Philip, for joining me today, and I'll come back to you and hear
how
it goes.
That's a pleasure, Kirsten, and thank you for your own contributions, of course.
Thank you.
What will you do when the satellites go down? Will it pull the plug on your world? No more tom-tom telling you where to go. You'll have to find your own way like the fox and the crow. No more in-life entertainment, no more playing with the self-games. All your apps will collapse, nothing will be the same. Will your vision, if you have a vision, be blurred? Will your voice, if you have a voice, be slurred? Will your soul, you do have a soul, be stirred? Will you remember, remember the world? Missiles grounded, unguided, the balance of power on one sided. The eye in the sky that looks at what you do and why. Suddenly can't find you cause it's blinded. GPS dislocated the earth back as it was created. All the drones and the clones would lose their way home. They crash or they'd wander for years. Will it all bring you happiness or tears? Can you use a map for your personal journey? Do you know how it all fits together? Are you independent or so dependent you need someone else to tell you the weather? Can you follow your nose or are you pulled by your ring? Do you hum the tunes of others or can you yourself sing? Can you see with your own eyes or does someone see for you? Can you hear with your own ears or is that also done for you? You automatic, robotic, are you Adam's Family Gothic? Do you have your own soul or did somebody buy it? Do you have your own goal or did you destroy it? Did you lose yourself and not even know it? Just a consumer, busty boomer with nothing to show for it. Oh, it's all gone quiet without the hum of machines. Oh, was I thinking selling off all my dreams? I'm a wave of light with every right to exist. Just have to get back on my horse, I don't need to enlist. And there's a company forming of those who are unformed, who aren't frog marching to their death, but are busy being born. There's a company forming of those who have their own light and who just don't need to be a satellite. Satellites go down, will it be the end or the beginning of your world? No more voices to tell you, nothing more to sell you. The top down, taken down, will that wake you up? Do you know your way to the well and how to fill your own cup? Can you breathe for yourself, not have someone breathe for you? Can you speak for yourself and not be spoken for? Can you find your own keys to open the door? Will you miss life go on undeterred? Or will you miss being one of the herd? Or do you think this song's just absurd? Or will you rise and fly free as a bird? Will your vision, if you had a vision, be blurred? Or will your voice, if you have a voice, be slurred? Or will your slovenly soul be stirred? Will you remember, remember the world? Satellites go down, will it pull the plug on your world? No more tom-tom telling you where to go. You'll have to find your own way like the fox and the crow.
We We've come to the end of this week's Herbal Medicine Show, brought to you as usual by Heartwood Herbal Education. Thank you for listening, and thank you to Trude Lauksund for telling us about the light route, to Ashley Ramsden for the poetry, and to Philip Kilner for the insight he gave us into the fascinating world of relational arts and organic design. Thank you to Nick Rowley and Peter Firebrace for the music, and to Steve Thomas and Nick from the Heartwood production team for superb technical support. Please join me again next week for another dose of plant power.